As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Required Listening. I'm your host, Scott Goldman, the executive director of the Grammy Museum. Every week in the Clive Davis Theater, I have the particular privilege of talking to great music artists about their inspirations, their motivations, what goes into making great music. On today's episode, three of the most prominent names in music over the last half century: Clive Davis, Kenny Babyface Edmonds, and Johnny Mathis. Now, they were brought together by Clive Davis to produce and record a new album by Johnny Mathis entitled Johnny Mathis Sings the Great New American Songbook. Think songs like Bruno Mars' Just the Way You Are or Leonard Cohen's classic Hallelujah. The album was produced by Kenny Edmonds and the songs were interpreted by Johnny Mathis. But let's consider these three gentlemen. The list of artists whose careers Davis has shepherded reads like a modern history of the music business. Janis Joplin, Sly Stone, The Grateful Dead, Aretha Franklin, Billy Joel, Alicia Keys, Bruce Springsteen, Barry Manilow, Lou Reed, Patti Smith, Carly Simon, and of course, Whitney Houston. And I might add that he's the namesake of our theater at the Grammy Museum. Now, Kenny Edmonds has won 11 Grammy Awards and written, get this, an incredible 47 top 10 hits. And of course, Johnny Mathis, whose greatest hits collection spent an incredible 491 consecutive weeks on the Billboard Top 100. Our discussion ranged from song choices to production decisions and how an artist like Mathis seems so completely grateful after decades in music for the opportunity to work with these incredible collaborators. Now, Clive doesn't miss a beat in finding every opportunity to encourage the audience's appreciation for his artist and the song choices that they made. So let's go to the Clive Davis Theater and listen to my conversation with Clive Davis, Babyface, and Johnny Mathis. So allow me to make a couple of very special introductions here. First, a gentleman whose career credits include 11 Grammy Awards, an incredible 47 top 10 Hot 100 hits. He's worked with artists from Boyz II Men to Celine Dion, Aretha Franklin to Mariah Carey, Mary J. Blige to Toni Braxton, TLC, Usher, and Outkast, just to name a few. He was recently inducted, and rightfully so, into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, the producer of Johnny Mathis Sings the Great New American Songbook, Kenny Babyface Edmonds. Right there. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, an artist whose six-decade career has been marked by sales and artistic success without compare. Over 60 albums to reach the Billboard charts, a dozen achieving gold or platinum status. Songs such as Chances Are or Misty that have truly become part of our shared musical DNA. He is a five-time Grammy nominee and in 2003, a recipient of the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. Would you please welcome Johnny Mathis.
got a microphone right under you there. There you go.
Oh, bless your heart. It's strange, you know, listening to yourself with other people listening at the same, you don't know whether to cringe or go, oh, don't listen to that part. Thank you so much for being so nice to me. Thank you.
This is an honor for us. So I'm riffing off of that. What do you hear when you listen to yourself? Do you hear the beauty of it? Do you hear specific parts? Do you hear the mistakes?
You know what? I hear different things at different times. Some of the songs, for instance, over the years that I recorded with Percy Faith, religious songs, the Kol Nidre Eleili, and things of that nature. And I hear the words. Melody has to be there. But when I listen to this, I want to thank Babyface here. I hear so many wonderful things that I'm not capable of doing, but I was so happy to be a part of this project, and I am just very grateful to be on the stage, not only with Babyface, but with Clive Davis. I wanted to say something about the fact that when I first came to Columbia Records, I never really met anybody, hierarchy people. I never knew whether they ever listened to me. But with Clive, it was wonderful because he introduced me to Tommy Bell. And Tommy Bell wrote all these wonderful songs for the Stylistics and what have you. And I was in love with all those songs at that moment in time. You'll never know what it's like to be a singer. And you hear all these songs and you can't wait to get in to record them. So I got a chance to work with Tommy, and Clive has been on my side, as he mentioned earlier. I've sung for him on so many occasions, and it's just a joy to be on the same stage. We're still here, Clive. Mm. We're still here.
So, indeed. So I'm very interested in this relationship. The producer-artist relationship, you know, oftentimes can make or break the sound of a track or an album. Babyface, first of all, tell me the first time you remember hearing Johnny Mathis.
Johnny was Christmas to me. I mean, Christmas isn't Christmas until you hear Johnny sing. That's when it's officially Christmas.
And, yeah.
it's not until that happens. And I go all the way back to when hearing Chances Are, and that was like, really, it's like the voice of an angel. It's like, mm-hmm. You know, who is this? Why is this? It's like, and it was, it just blew me away from years ago. So to finally be able to actually go in a studio, it was nothing that I ever expected would happen in my life. And then Clive calls me and says, hey, I got an idea for you. Get it.
So here you are working. Now I'm going to talk about you in the third person, and I apologize for that. So here you are working with someone that you've been listening to since you were a kid.
Yeah.
An iconic, legendary voice. A little bit of pressure going on there?
Yeah, a lot of pressure. but I felt safe in the hands with Clive and the couple other guys that were on there, Jay Landers and John Delp. They were everybody was all teaming up, and they were making sure we would not go the wrong way. We were gonna make sure that we did it the right way. Yeah. I couldn't mess this one up because this was, you know, it's Johnny. Yeah.
Tell me about some of the discussions, and Clive, you know, feel free to jump in here, in terms of making the song choices. As Clive said, you know, very, very much intent on creating new standards, you know, if you will. Tell me about the discussions about making the song choices.
I'll let Clive start with that.
Well, the truth is, when you work, you know, with someone like Kenny Edmonds, and he and I met for the first time when I asked him and L.A. Reid to do the Whitney, I'm Your Baby Tonight, Whitney Houston album. And they did such an amazing job. And they had 19 number one R&B records, but never a number one pop record, and we knew that it was time for Whitney in the third album. to show that she could sing pure urban songs or songs with a more urban base. They delivered big time. We got along so well that we launched together this incredible venture that he and L.A. shared, known as LaFace Records. And so we went through Usher and TLC and Toni Braxton and Pink and Outkast. I mean, an incredible run. So when you deal with his genius, which it is, I had asked when Whitney was doing Waiting for Exhale, please don't just have different artists, the temp score with Stephen Bishop, James Taylor. What you need in a movie like this is statements for African-American women so that the songs have got to move the storyline forward. And in short order, he came up with the first number one pop hit that Mary J. Blige had, Not Gonna Cry, Sitting in My Room for Brandy, Shoop Shoop for Whitney Houston. I mean, one after another. So when he agreed to work on this project, you don't discuss it. Yes, I suggested, and Johnny and I went back and forth on the song choices, but once he had them, you know, you let him do his thing, and he did it in a remarkable way.
You're kind of laughing here a little bit about what were those discussions like about the song choices?
Hey, do you want me to sing that song? Well, because you get knee-jerk, you know, you've got your own mind about what you do and how you do it and what have you. And it was over the years, though, my career is exactly like that. I've always had some, I don't know what to sing. I mean, you know, I sing stuff, but but the guidance that people give you and the revelation of these songs, they're new to me. It's like you, when you listen to something that's absolutely new, that's the way I hear the song, and I go, I wonder if I can sing that. It's got some high notes in it, you know. But that's what people like Clive, they have an understanding. How does he know that I can sing that? You know, you have no guarantee. And so he puts himself on the line a little bit by suggesting. But so far, 100%. Thank you very much. And I'd like to, and I can't say enough about this gentleman who lent us his studio. He has an incredible studio, recording studio. And I'm so stupid. I never knew you played the guitar. I didn't. I thought it was a singer, right? Singers don't play guitar. The singers I know can only sing. They can't do anything else. But it was such a joy when we were in the studio. He came out with his guitar, and he sat down and thing and just played this stuff. It's crazy, because I know his music and I know his singing, and he has given himself the greatest thing that anybody can do for another person. That's the friendship. He's given me friendship, and what a joy it is to be with him on this stage.
So, you know, producers can do many things for artists.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, but that could be part of it. Tell me a little bit about how Kenny helped you through the process of making this record.
Well, he made me do it 150 times, and you know, I found out later that he liked my singing. Very important.
Step one.
So naturally, he wanted it to be good because he likes my singing. Okay, we'll do it. We'll do it till the crows come in. And that's what we did. We did a lot of takes because he wanted certain qualities that he heard that sounded like Johnny Mathis. And sometimes I go in the studio and, you know, your voice isn't quite what it should be or something and what have you, and you're struggling. And you don't sound like Johnny Mathis. You sound like somebody else. But he was wonderful. I would sing something, and I thought, I can't sing it any better. And he said, I know you can, but you can sing it differently. Oh, it's an English lesson too. Okay. Grammatically.
Hi there. I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
The biggest stars in country music will be taking the stage at our 2024 iHeart Country Festival, presented by Capital One.
iHeart Country.
Jason Aldean. Keith Urban. Jelly Roll. Old Dominion. Lady A. Riley Green. Ashley McBride. Brothers Osborne. Walker Hayes. All hosted by Bobby Bones at Austin's Moody Center. Saturday, May 4th. Stream only on Hulu. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific.
Was there a particular song that you worked on where you knew at that point that this partnership would work? Was there one song that sort of stood out where it's like, yep, this is going right?
All the songs become a blur after a while, and all you remember is whether you achieved what you were after at that song. The minute I heard the playback on the first song that I did, where he kept suggesting that I do it over again and again and again and again and again, I was hooked. I said, I'll do it till the cows come in, you know, because he knows what he wants. Yeah. But I've been doing this for so many years with so many people who never gave their opinion and never said anything to me. And I was always on my own and I was just guessing. I'm a singer. I'm not a producer and what have you. So all I heard was what I thought was good. But they are sitting there listening to me as fans, as well as being technicians and what have you. And so it was a joy to be with them. It was a joy to work that hard and to get the results. Sometimes you work hard and you don't get the results. Mm. But this time, we did. Yeah.
Kenny, tell me, the first time you started listening back to these tracks, what were you hearing from him? Were you hearing something different, something better, something more than you might have imagined?
When I listened to the track before?
As you're listening, as you're starting to record and you're listening to this stuff back and getting used to working with Johnny.
The first moment that Johnny started singing and we were just like, that's Johnny Mathis. And that was the best thing about it. It's like, you know, it was Johnny Mathis. I mean, you have to worry about, like, you know, now, Johnny, you're 82? I was almost adding a year. 82?
I think there's a birthday coming.
So you got to wonder, you know, at some point you're thinking, okay, is he going to have the same voice? Is he going to be, he looks the same, but is he going to sound the same? And he walked in and he started singing and it was like, that's Johnny Mathis. It was this same beautiful voice that I grew up listening to. And I almost every day I stopped myself from saying, can you sing like Winter Wonderland? just thinking it. Anyway. I didn't ask him that. But the other part of it was that Johnny he was just like sunshine walking into a room. Because as you can see, he's funny as hell, and he is this person all the time. And you wouldn't expect that from chances are. You know, you just wouldn't
expect. Sometimes wear a silly grin.
Yes. That's the trick, the silly grin. but he's so funny and such one of the loveliest people I've ever met in my life. This is a person that is that God has blessed him with such a spirit. And there's a reason why he has that voice.
Yeah.
Because God gave it to him, and God also gave him this beautiful spirit. And I wish everybody knew him the way that I know him, because, you know, he just brings happiness to you when he walks in a room.
Yeah.
He's that guy. He's amazing.
We listened to the, you know, the first track on the record, Hallelujah. And I was surprised that you had not recorded that song previously, because it seems to me, of the many songs on the record, that one was somehow made for you to sing.
Well, that just goes to show you that I keep reiterating it. I'm just a singer. I don't know what I should sing. So these people that, they're so important in my life. They're so important. I'd still be singing, you know, I don't know what I'd be singing. But I just am so excited about this new album, because it brings me up to date, you know. I mean, come on now, I'm 82 years old, you know, what's he gonna sing? And that's sort of the way things are. I need help, and I've had the best possible with Clive Davis in my life. I mean, it has been the most wonderful thing. Every time I kind of have a little lull in my career, he calls me and said, how do you like to sing for, you know, everybody in the world that does what they do? And I get a boost in my career. Very important. Thank you, Clive, for all those years. I've got a picture of Clive and I when we were both 12 or something like that. I've got it over there. But as all of these things, you have to have for a career. There's so many singers that I've heard that are absolutely incredible, but nobody's ever heard them. And it's just, it's not fair, of course, but that's the way things are. So I've had to have all of these people helping me along the way, suggesting me, you know, for things to try, and then I'll try anything, you know. But they have knowledge that I don't have, and I understand that. My dad beat it into my head years and years ago. My dad was my best pal in the world. He said, come on, son, this is what we're going to do. He was always that way, inclusive. He had 7 kids. He and my mom worked hard all the time, but he still had time for me. He suggested, after I was 12 years old, he said, son, why don't we take some voice lessons? And I said, Dad, I can sing. He said, yeah, I know, but... And anyway, that's kind of dad I had. He was just a wonderful human being. And I'm fortunately, he lived long enough to share in my success. He and my mom did. And it's all because of these people like this, because all I do is sing.
Is there something in a song when Kenny and Clive were picking out songs and going through them with you? Is there something in a song? What does a song have to have to catch your ear?
You never know until you sing it.
Until you sing it.
I've turned down the Lord's Prayer, you know.
But you have to sing it first.
You have to sing it, yeah. And sometimes I've fought, like everybody else, I don't want to sing that song. That's a terrible song. And then I sing it, and it sounds fine. No problems. So I don't know. I'm a singer. Mm.
So let me read you. I want to read you a quick quote. The gentleman who wrote "You Raise Me Up." Now, "You Raise Me Up" has been done by many artists in many different languages. And he said, "Johnny Mathis has one of those instantly recognizable voices of America that has endured and been loved for over half a century. I grew up listening to him, And to think, out of all the songs he could have chosen for this special album, that Something I'd Written would have this honor, well, it's something for which we songwriters live.
And God bless the songwriters. Oh, you should hear my efforts at writing songs. You would.
Clive.
I'm going to take this moment, okay, a little unscheduled, spontaneous, because one of the songs that I came up with, and obviously with my background with Whitney Houston, I was so enamored. At the time, she did Bodyguard. And when I first saw the film, there was only one song in it. And I said, you can't do that. People won't know why she needed a bodyguard just to have a straight-talking thriller. So I convinced Kevin Costner for more songs to be placed in the film. And this one song I sent to Kevin after I had heard it from the composers. He loved it, and it plays an important role in the Bodyguard film. The composers are here, and because they're here today, first let me introduce you to Judd Friedman and Alan Rich, the composers.
So, you know, sometimes I think there's one thing that occasionally gets lost when talking about your career. And that is, you were one of the first artists, the earliest artists, to embrace the concept of an album as a body of work, as opposed to, you know, it was very much a singles business in the 50s. And you embraced the idea of songs as a collection. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think it has a lot to do with, first of all, the gentleman who signed me to my contract, George Avakian, Columbia Records, was the head of jazz at the time. And he was accustomed to presenting his artists with an album of songs. And I didn't think I had enough pyrotechnics vocally to warrant making a single record. I thought, I don't know what I thought, but they had to be something that I didn't have. I thought that in order to succeed as a singer, I was going to have 2, 3, 4 songs that people would listen to, because most of the songs that I sang in those days were pretty mushy songs, you know, the words were kind of romantic and they weren't very good romantic, they turned out, I needed something that wasn't jazz, and it wasn't whatever was going on at the time. So all the luck that I've had along the way, getting introduced to the right people, especially Columbia Records, because they were interested in quality as opposed to big hit records. They didn't have many. And so they were willing to wait until whatever possibilities I had as an artist, wait until it happened. And there's so many things that have to be in place, you know, when you have a career. You just don't do it all. You're one little element of it. And I'm so grateful to all of the people, and especially the gentleman who signed me to my record contract, George Avakian, who is the gentlest, kindest, most wonderful, intelligent, Armenian man that I ever met.
Yeah, and you signed that first contract in 1956 with Columbia Records, and you're still with Columbia Records.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
What is having a home like that, in a sense, mean?
First of all, it's rare. I've been told by somebody at the record company that my tenure with them has been the longest of any of the artists, and. So that's all I know.
Yeah.
And I'm ignorant in that respect. I don't know any other thing other than Columbia Records being my home. And there's always been somebody there who has cared enough about me. And let's face it, it's not just your records. I haven't had a lot of hit records. I had a few, but you have to have all the time, you know, to be thought of all the time by these people. But they've hung in there with me, and that's what you have to have. You have to have all sorts of elements going along. And I've been very lucky. I've been healthy right from the beginning. I was involved in athletics, and so that helped a lot.
San Francisco State.
I didn't really plan it. It just, that's what you do when you're a kid and you have no money. You just go and run around the track.
Hi there. I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
The biggest stars in country music will be taking the stage at our 2024 iHeart Country Festival, presented by Capital One.
iHeart Country.
Jason Aldean. Keith Urban. Jelly Roll. Old Dominion. Lady A. Riley Green. Ashley McBride. Brothers Osborne. Walker Hayes. All hosted by Bobby Bones at Austin's Moody Center. Saturday, May 4th. Stream only on Hulu. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific.
You know, when they're young, jazz musicians in particular are told to, in some way, no matter what the instrument is, to find their voice. And I'm wondering, because, you know, Kenny was talking about the moment that you started singing, it was Johnny Mathis, it was that voice. How did you find your voice?
My dad was a singer, but he had seven kids, and he had to work all the time. He and my mom did. One day he came home with this piece, pile of wood, it looked like. And we had this four-room basement flat that we lived in. There were nine of us because we had two of our relatives staying with us at the time. So there were nine people in four rooms. And he sat down after fiddling around with this pile of wood for hours and hours and hours. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, we heard this song. And it was my dad playing the piano. So from that time on, I sat next to my dad and sang with him. And he taught me songs. And that was the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me. But my dad was my pal. He was like my best buddy in the world. We went fishing together. But he did that to all his kids. But I took. I mean, I really loved him. He was a great guy. And he sang. He sang just like me. Yeah. I sound like my dad.
So, fair warning. We're going to ask for just a couple questions from the house here. In a minute, but speaking of your father, you've talked often about the good fortune of growing up in San Francisco mm-hmm. in the 1950s and some of the great, particularly jazz artists that were coming through San Francisco at that time. Tell us about some of the artists that you saw when you were young.
Well, my older brother, Clem, and older sister, Marguerite, used to go to the jazz clubs. There were a couple. I used to go to the Black Hawk, which was a famous jazz club in San Francisco. And I had a buddy who played saxophone. And I would go to his rehearsals and sit there. I was about 12, 13. And I'd listen and watch
all of these famous people come through, people like Dizzy Gillespie, Earl Garner, Oscar Peterson, Miles Davis, on and on and on. And I knew these people from the time I was 12 and 13 years old. And when I finally started to sing and make records, and I see them on the tour, you know, and they, hey, I remember you, you old shithead. As I used to sit at the rehearsals and listen to them all play their instruments and sing and what have you. I've been blessed in so many ways, just good luck. I was so lucky. I was lucky to have a dad like my dad who took me to the Black Hawk, and because you couldn't go there. I was a kid. You couldn't go there. They served booze. And the dad would take me, and we'd sit in the back and listen to all these extraordinary people. Cyril Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald singing. Billy Eckstein became one of my best pals. He said, I heard you, little shithead. You know? When I was... And
nothing like a mentor.
But yeah, the gods have been so kind to me, and I'm still, you know, blessed to have a recording at my age. You know, still everybody sort of said, "Oh, that's nice."
And it sounds pretty good, I'll say. Do we have a question or two from the house? Yes, sir, right here.
I told a friend of mine I was coming to see you today, and he said, make sure to ask you about your first manager, Helen Nogan, how you met her.
Helen was the co-owner of the Black Hawk, which was the most famous jazz club in San Francisco at the time, and really probably has remained that. Of course, there aren't any jazz clubs left anymore, I don't think. But Helen Nogan was, she was Armenian, and I had been kind of used to meeting people who spoke different languages, but she was quite a character. She was part owner of the club, and she took me by the hand one time when I was about 13 or 14 and said, kid, and she had a mouth on her, boy. She said, she said you're gonna, I'm gonna make you a star. And she was so abrasive about her conversation when she talked to me. And then she had to meet my mom, and my mom said, John, you tell that woman you're not her son. You're. I said, Mom, that's just the way she is. So I had to go through just trying to keep those two people in my life together.
And Beverly.
And Beverly, how do you know? And Beverly, her daughter. Well, Bev was on my side all the time. Bev likes me. Yeah.
Who else? Yes, right there.
Any plans to write a book? You have so many fabulous stories.
That's a good question.
People that are not with us anymore.
And writing a book.
I have been told so many times that if I don't do it, they'll get it wrong, you know. And so many things that people have imagined about me, you know, just are the most far-fetched things you could ever think of. So, yeah, eventually I will. I mean, I sometimes amaze myself that I, certain things you have to do in life, and some it takes me a little bit longer than most people, I think. But I am gonna. There's a catalyst that you have to have whenever you do anything. You have to have the right people at the right time and the whole thing. And I'm going to make it happen because I really want the book to tell about the reality of what I've gone through. And it's exciting and wonderful, but it's not like some people think. But along the way, I must say this, and I don't mind to be so loquacious, but there's so many things that are a part of my life that are absolutely necessary if you're going to succeed. There's so many people who have so much talent, and they've never been able to be recognized, and I always keep that in the back of my mind, how lucky I am. But I've had so much help. I've had a lot of luck. I met people like Clive Davis. I met Babyface here has has sat and listened to me screech in the morning, you know, because he's been right there helping me along. And I couldn't ask for anyone more capable of doing what he does than him, because he sings like an angel. He's got clever lyrics. He, to my amazement, played this guitar. And probably some other things that I haven't, you know, found out about him. But that's what you have to have. If you're lucky enough to have it and it falls at the right time in your life, good things will happen.
Hmm. Speaking of having the right team, to bring this back around to the album, when they first came to you with the idea of the great new American songbook, what was your first reaction?
Well, you know, growing up as I did, listening to Nat Cole and Servo and Ella Fitzgerald and all these people like that, and I don't hear that music anymore. So, and I've been, I discovered golf about 40 years ago, and that's what I do. I come off the road, you know, doing my concerts, and I run to the golf course. So I haven't heard any music on the radio, because there's no radio anymore. You can't find stuff. So I just didn't know what I should have known. It would probably have helped me and saved me a lot of problems. But now I'm in tune and connected again, thanks to Clive Davis. I keep reminding him how connected he is at our age, and have gone and started when we started, and we're still excited about what we're doing. Mm. Thank you, Clive. And thank you, Babyface.
Clive, I'm
yes.
I'm gonna give you the last word. If you could put Johnny Mathis in context in American popular music.
All right, I'll do that after I say spontaneously that there are very few albums that one deigns to play each cut the way that we play today. In my career, I did it with each Whitney Houston album. I did it with Santana's Supernatural. And I did it with Rod Stewart's The Great American Songbook originally. And to keep an audience attention from a rap point of view, to play each cut and to know that it's taking hold, you got to do it rarely. So that in choosing to do it today, we're doing it because we feel the album is so special. It's not that it's going to come out and we're releasing single after single, so that you, in speaking to you as an audience, we're hoping that you're so taken with this album, apart from your feeling from Johnny, because Johnny here is co-starring with the copyrights. Johnny here is endorsing these copyrights, reinterpreting these copyrights to make them standards. And so from an attraction point of view, this album, every song in this album is a wonderful song interpreted and reinterpreted through the work of Kenny and with Johnny. So we're very dependent on you to spread the word, whether it be through the web, whether it be any other way, that a special, great traditional pop album, but a refreshing traditional pop album, a creative traditional pop album, a traditional pop album that has respect for new material that can grow into standards. And so, in summary, Johnny Mathis is at the top of the pantheon of all-time artists, without question. I mean, you find from a female point of view, that the three, in my opinion, I've just had a documentary coming out actually this weekend as well on my life. And I've had there these two gentlemen grace the premiere the other night, and it'll be available on Apple. And when asked, being interviewed, who were the three greatest singers in your lifetime, they are to me Aretha Franklin, Barbara Streisand, and Whitney Houston. When you talk about male artists in no order, but showing with all of the great singers in a lifetime, there are three. There are Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and the great Johnny Mathis.
Ladies and gentlemen, Clive Davis, Kenny Edmonds, and Johnny Mathis. Thank you, gentlemen.
I'm still blown away by Clive Davis's power of recall. Every track, every artist he's ever worked with still seemingly at the tip of his fingers. The album is a result of classic record making in a way that really rarely happens anymore. So first of all, I encourage you to listen to Johnny Mathis Sings the Great New American Songbook. I would also encourage you to go back and listen to Johnny Mathis's earliest material. That is the finest example of the state of pop music in the late 1950s and very early 1960s. So that's your required listening for today. Now, we're coming to you with new episodes every week. We're on all the social platforms, so let's keep the conversation going at Grammy Museum. If you're planning to visit Los Angeles, I do hope you'll visit us at the Grammy Museum. Our website, GrammyMuseum.org, has all the information on our activities, our programs, and our exhibits. And finally, a big thanks to the Required Listening team: Jason James, Justin Joseph, Kitrick Kearns, Jim Canella, Lynn Sheridan, Miranda Moore, Callie Weissman, Jason Hoke, Chandler Mays, Nick Stumpf, and everyone at How Stuff Works. Until next time, I'm Scott Goldman.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing.
This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The biggest stars in country music will be taking the stage at our 2024 iHeart Country Festival, presented by Capital One.
iHeart Country.
Jason Aldean. Keith Urban. Jelly Roll. Old Dominion. Lady A. Riley Green. Ashley McBride. Brothers Osborne. Walker Hayes. All hosted by Bobby Bones at Austin's Moody Center. Saturday, May 4th. Stream only on Hulu. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific.